Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. That's right. The name of this show is Today's Issues. Took us a long time to come up with that name. And we've used it for since 1991. So we're going to stick with it, and it's copyrighted. Nobody else is going to take our name from us.
We thought about yesterday's issues, but that just didn't have the same kick.
Right. I think we would have done well with yesterday's issues.
Yeah.
Huh? Ed Battagliano, the voice of reason there.
Yes.
Good morning, Ed.
If that's what we're calling it nowadays, the voice of reason.
Fred Jackson, good morning.
And I'm reasonable.
Fred's a newsman here. How long have you been in the news business, by the way?
About 40 years.
Right out of college or the service or what?
Well, I actually started when I was in high school. I did a news shift at a local radio station on Sundays when I was in high school.
Really?
Yeah.
So you got started, huh?
Real early.
Didn't you go in the Canadian Armed Services?
I went to university. I have a science degree, biology and chemistry, which is, you know, good place to go when you're going into journalism.
Yeah.
And then I went in the military and learned to fly jet airplanes and had a lot of fun. And then I decided I need to make money, so I went to journalism.
So when you got a science degree – uh-huh. In biology, so you could understand the heartbeat of the issues.
There you go.
And be the voice of reason.
There, how about that?
Yeah. Ray Pritchard. Ray, good morning to you.
Well, clearly, Tim, that makes me the voice of unreason.
What's left?
Right. We got to have diverse voices here, don't we?
That's so, right. All across the spectrum.
All across the spectrum, we got voice of reason. We got unreasonable voices, like Ray's from Kansas City, Kansas. We got Fred in here. You flew what kind of planes in the Air Force?
It was the trainer jet for the Canadian Air Force. Flew them for a while.
Okay.
Which is this pre-pilot work. I mean,
yep.
That sounds like you're a guinea pig, though.
No,
you're a training jet.
No,
let's
train this jet
and see
how
it works.
It's not like training wheels.
That's what
you know, and for military pilots nowadays, I know my brother-in-law was a Marine Corps pilot,
mm-hmm.
and so they flew trainers, T, whatever it was they were flying in Texas. He was
side-by-side jets.
Yeah. You don't train on the mainline fighter jets. You train in what are called trainer jets.
Normally you have an instructor beside you, and then after 10 lessons or so, if you can do it, you go solo, which is really, really interesting. When you look over that first time and you don't have anybody sitting beside you.
You know, after,
that's called commitment and faith.
All these years I've known you, I didn't know you were a pilot.
Mm. I didn't either. Just now. I knew he served in the Canadian military. Yeah. So,
all right, a lot to talk about. Hey, Ray, in just a moment, I want to get you to talk about Lent, okay?
Okay, sure.
Because it's a real problem. And I don't have anything to get mine off with. So
that's Lent. Lent. You're asking about Lent or Lent?
Lent or Lent.
It's a terrible, often misused joke, and I couldn't help myself again. Fred, but leading up to Ray talking about what Lent is on the Christian calendar, you have a story related to that, right?
Yeah, there was an incident in Utah yesterday. A young man, he looks maybe, 8 years old, 9 years old, something like that. He showed up at school, and he had... I guess, is it soot? Would it be right?
Ash.
Ash on his forehead. Ash. And the teacher there, the young boy's name is William McLeod. The teacher thought it was a dirt spot and proceeded to take it off his forehead, even though he said it's a religious symbol for Lent.
Right.
And so we have a bit of an exchange here. We have the little boy talking about what happened in the classroom there in Utah. The teacher was disciplined, and they were quite upset about it. And then she explains why she did it. So first you're going to hear the little boy, and then the teacher, whose name is Moana Patterson. Cut number five.
The teacher walked over and said, like, what is that? And I was like, it's Ash Wednesday, and I'm Catholic for Salem. And he's like, no, it's inappropriate. Go take it off. So she gave me a disinfection wipe, whatever they're called, and she made me wipe it off. Wiped it off in front of all my friends and in the corner. And it was like, why did she wipe it off? I was like, I don't know. She just made me.
I had no idea it was a religious symbol. When I learned it was a sacred symbol for Ash Wednesday, I immediately apologized to the boy and his family. My entire life has been centered around respecting diversity. I would never, ever intentionally disrespect any religion or any sacred symbol.
So, yeah, that was the scene there. And
well, good for her for apologizing.
Yeah, I would say this, and then we'll pitch it to Ray, because to me it's believable in our increasingly biblically illiterate, although Lent's not in the Bible technically, but biblically illiterate culture and increasingly secular culture for someone not to know that, although I'm not sure why she told the boy it was inappropriate if she thought it was just
dirt.
So I'm with you guys. I think it was good for her to apologize. Let's figure this out. You should never wipe it off if you think it is a religious symbol. But Ray, I don't doubt that there are many people out there who've never heard of Lent.
Well, it doesn't surprise me at all, Ed. As you said, in our increasingly secular society, people don't understand where Lent comes from or what it means. And you observed 100% correctly, Ed, that there isn't the word Lent isn't in the New Testament, L-E-N-T, the Lenten season. There's no command about that in the New Testament, meaning it's a matter of religious freedom. It's a matter about which Christians may freely differ. But if you're Catholic, if you're one of the Orthodox churches, Russian Orthodox, Greek Orthodox, Presbyterian, Methodist, Episcopal, well, then you know about the Lenten observance. Basically, it goes back, 1800 years early, not all the way to the New Testament, but the idea being that as we head down toward Good Friday and Easter Sunday, as we head toward Holy Week, which is where all that we believe comes true, that the climax of the life of Christ on the earth, that it is a good thing. It's a useful exercise for Christians to prepare themselves spiritually for Lent. And so it always begins on Ash Wednesday. And the ashes on the forehead have to do with our mortality. From the dust we come to the dust we shall return. It's a mark of penitence and repentance. It's a way of saying, I am mortal, only God is immortal. My very life comes from Him. And the thought behind Lent is that when it's done properly, it's a time of spiritual reflection and introspection. Sometimes evangelicals wonder if we should observe it or not. I was raised in a church that never mentioned Advent, never mentioned Lent, so it's completely outside my religious tradition. But in recent years, I've come to understand that it is a good thing for Christians to spend some time contemplating the Lord. It is a good thing heading up to Good Friday and Easter to set aside the cares of the world and to focus on who Jesus is, why he came, what his life means, what his death means, and what the resurrection should mean for all of us. So to all of our friends out there, I would say, if you don't observe Lent, you're perfectly free not to. I don't think it's a command, but I do think if there's a season of the year in which we can prepare ourselves to draw closer to the Lord, then that's always a good thing. And some people get into the question of, well, giving up things for Lent. And I just want to say, look, if you need to give something up, you shouldn't wait for Lent, right?
Right.
if you need to give it up, just give it up. And if giving it up for Lent will help you in some area of your life, well, that's fine. But I don't think that's the main thing. I think the main thing is getting to know the Lord Jesus, reading the Bible and praying, and maybe withdraw. Now, there are people, I've seen this on the internet quite a bit this year, a number of Christians who said, I'm giving up social media. Hey, I fully understand how all-absorbing social media can be. And maybe by, quote, fasting from social media, it will take your mind away from some of the concerns of the world. Anything that focuses our hearts and minds on the Lord Jesus Christ is good for us. And in that sense, I think Lent can be, for evangelical Christians, a time of great spiritual growth.
Just one more quick thing, Ray. Do you have anything for Lent observance at your website?
Absolutely. If you come to keepbelieving.com today, look down on the lower left side of our front page, and there's a little link there. It says four free Lenten devotional ebooks. Four free Lenten devotional ebooks. And we start on, there's a devotion for each day starting on Ash Wednesday, which is already past us, heading up to Easter Sunday, April the 21st. And you can download any one of these four. One is called Faces Around the Cross. One is called Lord of Glory. One is called In His Steps. One is called Who Is That Man? There's a devotion for each day and a prayer. And we invite our friends to come to keepbelieving.com, download one of them, two of them, all four of them. They're free. Use those ebook devotionals to focus your heart and mind on the Lord Jesus during this Lenten season.
I'm thinking about giving up for Lent Black Olives and soccer on TV.
Wow, you really understand the spirit of Lent.
You're really going out on the edge there.
I think I can.
You can give up soccer?
I think I can do that for. How long do I have to do that for?
It's usually 40 days, right?
Is it
40 days?
Okay.
I told my mom one time, I said, I want to give up cauliflower and Brussels sprouts for Lent. And she said, you have clearly missed the point.
You missed the point. That's right.
All right. So go to your website, Ray, and what do I need to do to find the information Ed's asking about?
Go to keepbelieving.com. On the lower left-hand side, you'll see a link there, and it simply says, four free Lenten devotional ebooks. Click on that, and it will take you to the links. You can download one, two, three, or all four, and they're free.
Okay, thank you for that. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. You may wonder, where is Walker today? Well, Walker is awaiting the arrival of twins. And it's going to be who knows when.
Right.
This afternoon, tonight, in the morning, we don't know. Doubtful maybe today, but we'll see. But Lexi, his wife, he couldn't be here because it's so close. How about that?
And we are praying that of course, in God's timing, that the babies come. But you and Allison want to see him before you go to the Holy Land.
Yeah, we're good. We're going to leave him with our group to go to the Holy Land. We got to go to New York tomorrow and then the Holy Land on Thursday.
So you want to see those precious twins before you go.
Absolutely. We'd love to be our seventh grandchild under five years old.
Oh, I know. I don't know how you're keeping them straight, frankly.
I'm not. That's the problem.
that's the problem.
I'm praying tonight going, Lord, number who's five. That? Number who's five. God bless number five. By the way, if you want to watch the show, Facebook or YouTube, you can tune in there.
Today's Issues.
Today's Issues on Facebook or YouTube. Keep up with us there. Today's Issues, Facebook or YouTube. Well, Dr. Frank Turek usually joins us on Tuesdays, and he's here today. He's with Cross Examined Ministries. Frank lives in the great state of North Carolina. And good morning, Frank.
Good morning, gentlemen. You know, for Lent, I'm giving stuff up. I'm just going to give up giving stuff up.
That's quite a sacrifice.
Yeah, you've missed the point, I think.
I have? Somebody said they were going to take a fast from social media. Do you know there's an app for that?
Yes, he'll be here all week, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, by the way, Frank, I want a serious compliment. I actually watched some videos at lunch yesterday, some YouTube videos. I think I actually started off by watching some hockey highlights, and then somehow I saw one of yours pop up. You have some where you go on college campuses and you you take questions from the audience. You make, you know, a presentation and stuff. Very, very good job on those college campuses, Frank. So,
well, thanks, Ed. In fact, I'm going to be at the University of Memphis next week, next Monday. So I think we have some AFR stations in the Memphis area.
Mm-hmm. You're just not.
It's open to anybody. Anybody can come. It's 7 p.m. this coming Monday, the 18th of March. And all the details are on our website, crossexamine.org. So anyone can come to those events. The fun thing about the events is you get a lot of questions, particularly from atheists. So that's...
So
that's,
when
that's
is
what
it,
makes
when,
it fun.
When is
we
it
also
again?
Stream
it's at the University of Memphis a week from?
This coming Monday.
Okay, this coming Monday.
The 18th, yeah.
Where on campus?
It is. I'll look it up as we're talking. It's on our website, but let me find that.
That's only 90 minutes from us here where we are.
Yeah, it's not far
from
Tupelo.
But we do have listeners in the Memphis area on a station we have there.
So let me see exactly where it is. University of Memphis. It is in the University Center, 499 University Street.
Okay. What time?
Yeah, we're at 7 to 9 p.m.
What are you going to be doing?
I don't have enough faith to be an atheist, and we take questions, too.
So you speak, and then you take all comers.
I take all sorts of questions. I had a Muslim at the University of South Carolina this past Thursday. That was fun.
What was his question or her?
Well,
question?
He was trying to say that you know, Islam isn't really violent; it's just the political aspect of Islam. Or he was kind of disassociating Islam from politics, actually. And I said, "Well, I wish your view was correct, Abdullah, but 1,400 years of of history shows us that Islam and politics go together in their worldview, and unfortunately, many people in Islam believe in jihad." And that's what the past 1,400 years have shown us. That's exactly what the Quran says in Surah 8 and Surah 9. So I wish his view was correct, but I don't think it is.
Did he argue with you or debate you?
Well, a little bit. In fact, we'll probably put that up on YouTube at some point after we edit it, after we, you know, pull it out of the... actually, you can see it right now. You can see it off on our Facebook page or our website, crossexamine.org. If you go to the... Go to crossexamine.org and just look at the live stream. You can fast forward to the Q&A toward the end, and you'll see it there.
All right. Let's talk about the fact that so much of the culture war is due to people seeking an identity in something other than God. I ask you to write what we should talk about today, and that's what you put down. So what is in the culture war, people are seeking identity in something other than God. Talk about that.
Yeah, well, I was watching a presentation by Tim Keller. I don't know if you're familiar with him,
yes.
But he's a pastor from New York who's recently retired, and he's very insightful. Anyway, he was talking about the fact that there are traditionally two ways to get your identity. The traditional way is you go outside yourself and you see what your community tells you to do. And you know, in the old days, if your father was a blacksmith, you were a blacksmith, right? And you kind of got your identity from your family or from your culture. The modern way, however, is you don't go outside, you go inside, and you try and figure out what your desires are, and then you try and get the culture outside of yourself to adapt to you. So the entire culture has to adapt to what you want to do, and that's called the modern self. And Tim Keller goes into a great detail on this. I'm oversimplifying it. The problem is that either one of those two ways requires you to please somebody else. Because you're going to get your self-worth from what others, whether they're outside your culture, or I should say outside of yourself, what your parents or your community says, or you're going to try and get your self-worth in the modern way by saying, I've got to achieve my dreams. And if I don't achieve my dreams, then I'm going to feel badly about myself. Well, if people in society are standing in the way what you think your dreams are, maybe your dream is to... be in a same-sex relationship, for example, and then you're going to want everybody in society to approve of what you want to do. And that's why I think many people think when you say, for example, that say same-sex relationships are wrong or sinful or we're not going to celebrate them in society, they think you're attacking them, their identity. They can't disassociate their identity from their behavior. And that's why the civility goes away in society. That's why people call you names. Oh, you're a bigot, you're a homophobe, you know, you're intolerant, all these things. They don't want to have a reasoned conversation because you are against them because that's their identity. Now, the truth of the matter is we don't achieve our identity either through the traditional way of going outside ourselves and asking our society what they approve of, or in the modern way of looking inside ourselves and figuring out what our desires are. We don't achieve our identity. We receive it. We get it directly from Jesus because he is the one that establishes who we are. And in him, we are secure. He'll never let us down. He will never tell us that we're not worth anything because we're made in his image. We're made in God's image. So we don't achieve it. That just leads to frustration. We only receive it. It comes from Jesus. And until we realize that, we're going to have a lot of conflict in our society.
Right. It's Fred here. Isn't that why our culture really is spiraling in? Because all you have is, you know, subjective truth, no objective truth anymore.
Yeah, I think you're right, Fred. I think, in fact, sometimes I ask audiences. I ask audiences when I go to college campuses. I'll ask the audience at University of Memphis on Monday night, do you determine right and wrong, or do you discover right and wrong? Well, our culture tells us we determine it, right? You determine what's right for you. Nobody can tell you what's right or wrong. Well, the problem is, if that's the case, then we couldn't call, say, a pedophile wrong because he determines what's right for him, right? Mm. Or we couldn't call actually a murderer really wrong because he determines what's right for him. No, we don't determine right and wrong. We discover it. And until we realize that we discover our identity, we receive it rather than achieve it, we're going to continue to have these culture wars.
Okay, so we got about a minute or two left. So that I think that helps a lot of people understand why we get shouted down,
of course,
as homophobes and bigots and haters,
and they take it so personally.
And they take it so personally because okay, so you know, but you used to be able to say, you know, of course we do. We as Christians distinguish between this hating the sin and loving the sinner, so to speak, but the other side goes, well, no, if you call what I do sin, then that's who I am. I am a homosexual, and you're saying what I practice is sin. Therefore, you hate who I am as a person. That's what they say, right?
That's right. That's where they're getting their identity
from. You think they believe that, or you think that's also a very shrewd way of shutting, especially Christians, down, because the most offensive thing you say to a Christian is that you hate somebody. And then,
right.
and then the Christian goes, oh, no, I don't. No, please. Please, let me explain to you 100 ways I don't hate you. You know what I'm saying? They go, no. You call what I do immoral. So, therefore, you hate me. No, I don't. You know what I'm saying? See how that goes? And so, what do we do in that situation?
Well, I think the truth of the matter is that we don't determine right and wrong. We discover it. In fact, I just had one of these interactions on a college campus where a young woman got up and asked me, why did God make me a lesbian? Now, you can go to our YouTube channel and see the answer. We don't have time to get into it here. But I said, look, I'm not the general manager of the universe. I'm not the one that makes up right and wrong. This is derived directly from God's nature. So if you have a problem with it, you don't have a problem with me. You have a problem with God, whose very nature defines what good and evil are.
Yeah.
So.
Good answer. Looks like I've taught
and
you well.
And I watched that. I watched that exchange. Frank's very good. Folks, if you are in the Memphis area, go to crossexamine.org. Find out when and where Frank will be speaking at the University of Memphis. It is well worth your time, especially if you're interested in apologetics or you simply want to learn about how to defend the faith. Go hear Frank.
Thanks, Frank.
All right, thanks, guys. Good
all
seeing
right.
you.
Dr. Frank Turek, T-U-R-E-K. We'll be back momentarily with more of today's issues right here on American Family Radio.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Abraham Hamilton III of the Hamilton Corner.
When you are a witness, your actions will be consistent with that effective witness. witness. A witness is a state of being that happens when we're on stage or not, when the lights are on and when the lights are off, when we're in the presence of many or when we're standing alone before the audience of one.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook. In a move most Christians probably never expected to see, Walmart has created and is promoting a Facebook video ad that normalizes homosexual relationships, and they need to hear from you. The ad is part of a campaign released on Valentine's Day called Love is in the Aisle, a dating show at Walmart. Episode 2 features Pat and Andy, two homosexual men on a blind date as they meet at the store and shop together and discover whether or not they're compatible. Please sign the American Family Association petition to Walmart asking them to remove this pro-homosexual video and remain neutral on controversial issues. It's clear that Walmart is on the path to elevating homosexual relationships to the same level as the male-female model of marriage. Sam Walton must be turning over in his grave. Let Walmart hear from their Christian customers. We'll present the petition at corporate headquarters March 20th. Please sign our Walmart petition today at afa.net. That's afa.net.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Hello, Americans. Liberals are calling a 7-year-old Texas boy Little Hitler. I'll tell you why next. Liberty University is preparing students to enter a competitive job market. They have a low student-to-professor ratio, a caring Christian faculty, and more than 550 programs of study, ranging from undergraduate certificates to doctoral degrees. As the largest Christian university in the world, Liberty continues to establish itself as both a leading liberal arts university and an institution dedicated to the Christian faith. Learn more at liberty.edu. That's liberty.edu. Benton Stevens lives in Austin, Texas. The 7-year-old was inspired by President Trump's State of the Union address to help raise money to build the border wall. So Benton set up a hot chocolate stand at a nearby strip mall. He was forced to shut down his stand after liberals complained. Some posted pictures on Facebook, leading to all sorts of name-calling. One person called the child Little Hitler. I mean, who does that? We're talking about a 7-year-old. Benton's parents say they are not surprised by the hate. They say it's to be expected nowadays. But their son has not been deterred. He's still selling hot cocoa and, at last count, raised more than $5,000. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, Fred, and Ray. So if you want to apply for a job on this show, you must have a one-syllable name. Well, Walker, we let him on because he's my son. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Send us an email. If you'd like to send us an email, go to comments@afr.net. Comments@afr.net. Ray, what did you think about what Frank shared the last few minutes?
You know, it's a tremendous insight that truth is discovered, it's not determined. That flies in the face of everything we hear today, doesn't it? That we think, you know, we hear people talking about, well, that's true for you and not true for me. But if you leave God out, well, sure, then everything's up for grabs. But if there is a God who has spoken, if there's a God who created us, if there's a God who has spoken in this world and his word is true, then truth is determined by who God is and what he has said. So in that sense, I think Frank has put his finger on the major problem in modern society. It's not just about sexual ethics or abortion, as important as that is. This is ultimately the question of, do you believe in God and do you believe that his word is true? That's what we have to keep confronting the culture about. I appreciate Frank. I was thinking, Tim, you know, it's not easy to go there to the University of Memphis and all these other places Frank goes, because he doesn't know what they're going to say. He doesn't know who's going to show up. He's got more courage than most of us have, and God bless him, because he just stands in there and takes it and answers back.
And some of these young people are very contentious, And Frank is just as calm as a cucumber. I was watching his demeanor as much as anything, and he does a great job. But it is not for the faint of heart when he goes on. But I agree with Ray. This whole idea of do we determine morality or do we discover it, that to me is a perfect way of showing how the society has shifted. Because a generation ago, we talk about the Democratic Party is no longer your grandparents' Democratic Party. The shift has been that we're no longer having a conversation. Tim and I, we're not having a conversation and trying to discover the truth in that conversation. We can have give and take. We can respect each other's opinions because the truth is out there and we're just trying to discover it. No, that is gone. And now it is, I determine my own morality. The very fact that you're questioning me about it is a personal insult. And that's why it's gotten so uncivil. And I'm not sure who's typing, but somebody's typing. I can hear that.
I don't know.
Unless Fred, are you breathing hard? What is that?
I think
if that's a part of my, if that's my heart you're hearing, off to the cardiologist we go.
Anyway, I could talk all day about that kind of thing.
Really?
Frank. So,
All right, Fred, next story.
Nancy Pelosi making headlines this morning. She said, asked yesterday about the idea of the Democrats trying an impeachment move against President Trump. She says it's just not worth it. She says, unless there's something so compelling and overwhelming and bipartisan, I don't think we should go down that path because it divides the country. Well, guess what? That's Nancy.
I'm sorry. Just a minute. Let me get to laughing at Nancy Pelosi being concerned about dividing the country. Since when did she become Mother Teresa of the House here?
Well, she's become Mother Teresa because she's got some bad kids in the house.
Okay. Well, not only that,
that's good.
But they got nothing on Trump. That's why she doesn't want to bring up impeachment.
That's right. Yeah. And she knows.
So this is not the goodness of her heart?
No.
And she knows, it's 67 vote in the Senate if they ever tried to do that. Yeah. That's not going to happen. Now, on top of all of this, I sent an article around this morning from The Atlantic written by Rahm Emanuel. Remember Rahm Emanuel?
Oh, yeah.
I guess now former mayor of Chicago, and was he chief of staff with Barack Obama?
I think so. I think he was chief of staff for Obama.
Anyway, he's written an article. He says, how not to lose to Donald Trump. Wrote this in The Atlantic a couple of days ago. And basically, it's a warning to his former party.
Current party, but he's no longer in charge.
Yeah, he's saying, do you folks really want to win the next election? Then you better smarten up. Because you're falling into Donald Trump's playbook for 2020. And he said, Donald Trump revealed the playbook in his State of the Union address by saying this country will never be a socialist country.
Right.
And he says, watch out, because he is starting to get the feelers out there of the electorate, and the Democrats are falling into it. Let me read you a little bit about what he has to say in this Atlantic article.
Now, who are you quoting?
Rahm Emanuel, all right?
Okay.
He says, if 2016 proved nothing else, it demonstrated that Democrats ignore Trump's antics at their own peril. In much the same way, Democrats shouldn't paint his supporters with a brush so broad that it alienates convincible voters. Anyone else game to banish the word deplorable from the 2020 campaign? Now, that's a little slap against you-know-who, against Hillary Clinton. He says, earth the Democrats. Republicans are telling you something when they gleefully schedule votes on proposals like the Green New Deal, Medicare for All, and the 70% marginal tax rate. When they're more eager to vote on the Democratic agenda than we are, we should take a step back and ask ourselves whether we're inadvertently letting the political battle play out on their turf rather than our own. So, this is a warning from Rahm Emanuel about what the Republicans are up to. And he's saying their strategy could win them the 2020 election. Democrats, you better smarten up.
Well, Sandy Rios is with us. Sandy is the host of Sandy Rios in the Morning here on American Family Radio from 7:05 to 8 o'clock each weekday morning Central Time. And she's also Director of Governmental Affairs for AFA. and she lived in Chicago for a long time. Very familiar with Rahm Emanuel, I'm sure. Sandy, good morning.
Good morning, and it's not me typing. I just want to, I want a brownie point. Wasn't me typing.
And that leaves.
I think I know.
That leaves the only person who hasn't spoken up.
Oh, Ray, I just put you under the bus. I didn't mean to. Okay. I didn't really.
No problem.
Hey.
I guess I was saving myself, and I sacrificed you. How about that?
Hey, Sandy,
what are friends for, right?
Yeah, what are friends for, right?
Yeah,
hey,
exactly.
A couple things here, Sandy. One is, what do you think about Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, saying no, she's not going to
initiate impeachment.
Yeah. Initiate impeachment.
Well, I think it's as simple as this. They have inside information, polling and all of that, and I think they know they're kind of in trouble. In spite of what Rahm Emanuel says in this article that Fred referred to, he goes on to say that he thinks Trump is in big trouble. We don't know how 2020 is going to go, but I actually think the Democrats know that they're in trouble and that the whole idea of them being socialists is sticking and that people are listening. And there's a lot to say about that. If they are indeed socialists, which they are, and they have been for years, Rahm Emanuel is one of the cheerleaders, and so is Nancy Pelosi. If we knew more about their backgrounds, you would shudder. Let me just say that. So I think Nancy knows that this is very unpopular. And I think she also knows that impeaching the president would be very unpopular. So she's just trying to save their bacon. It's not, and nothing noble about it.
Yeah. And you know what? It's almost too late to do anything like this. And of course, you guys have mentioned, you ultimately be unsuccessful, right? Because of the numbers in the Senate, right? Or can the House do
it? Yeah,
you're talking about the Green New Deal?
No, I'm talking about impeachment.
Oh, I see.
The House can bring articles of impeachment, and they can try him, and he could be found. They could, it's like a grand jury indicting. So okay. An impeachment in the House is like an indictment. Then it has to go to the Senate to be voted on, yay or up or down, you know, by 60 votes. He has to be declared guilty or not guilty. But the House, yes. I think the House might well muster up enough votes to bring impeachment articles against him.
But if Speaker Pelosi is saying, no, we're not going to pursue this road, I think you're right. They see this as a big waste of time that you don't have time for, quite frankly, because we're in March now of 2019. So a year from now, the Democrats are going to be deciding who they're going to need all the attention on their presidential candidates as they, you know, run around the country trying to win their primary. And it would just be, you know, what do we know already? I mean, what don't we know already about this whole situation? We know that if you voted today, I would guess 90%, 95% of the Democrats would vote to impeach President Trump in the House. And then all of the senators probably would. And then it would be a party line vote. And so, I mean, and do we not already know that the Democrats hate President Trump? You know what I'm saying? So, and they believe he's guilty of all kinds of things, or either they pretend to act like they know he's guilty of all kinds of things that there's no evidence for. But it's got to be a little discouraging probably to their rabid newbies there in the in the House, Sandy, who want to impeach president.
Like AOC.
Yeah.
And the two Muslim
women.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez last night to the Washington Examiner with regards to what Nancy Pelosi had to say about not starting impeachment proceedings. I happen to disagree with that take.
Who said that?
This is AOC, Alexandria Ocasio.
Yeah, and Fred, didn't she go on to say if they won't do it, we will? Something to that effect, if they won't take leadership?
Yeah,
she said something like she was really, really, really bold.
That's a direct challenge to the speaker.
Yes, yes.
Well, that's a big problem. See, the Democrats are so used to be moving forward as a group and no dissension in the ranks, but now they have it. They've got these three in particular, the two Muslim ladies and AOC.
Right. And the Black Caucus.
And the Black Caucus. So she's got a problem. She's got a huge problem.
Yeah, well, I think it's funny as heck myself. I'm going to enjoy watching this.
Well, the other thing, too, is I just want to emphasize, I honestly think that Pelosi's motivation in calling off the dogs on impeachment is that it's going to hurt them politically.
Yeah.
less than it's a waste of time, although it is. I mean, they have a lot of stuff they want to accomplish, and they do need to spend time with their candidates. But honestly, Tim, I just think they know it's a no-win for them. They're gotcha. Yeah.
What about Rahm Emanuel?
My understanding, too, is that Rahm Emanuel, and we need to get Ray in here before he starts typing again. So, but didn't Rahm Emanuel say that the Democratic Party's taking a hard left turn? And that's coming from Rahm Emanuel. That's saying something. Wasn't that what one of the things he said, Fred?
I'll see if I can find the quote.
All right. Anyway, Ray, you got anything you want to toss in here on this? It is to Tim's point that if you're a conservative, it is kind of funny to, I'm looking at a cartoon on Fox News, and it's AOC standing beside Omar and Tlaib. We stand behind Pelosi 100%, and it shows Nancy Pelosi in a chair, gagged and bound by Green New Deal and socialism ropes. This is a problem for Speaker Pelosi.
You know, Ed, it seems to me, if I remember back to Bill Clinton, when he was impeached in the House, but the Senate did not vote to convict him, which left him in an unusual position. If I remember correctly, I think he actually came out stronger, became more sympathetic in the eyes of the public because of that failed attempt. And I think Nancy Pelosi doesn't want to see that happen because, yes, the House would probably vote to impeach. The Senate will never convict him. Trump ends up stronger, just like Bill Clinton did. So I think she's smart to take that off the table, though this is not any, Sandy, as you said, this is not an act of compassion toward the president. It's just straight political calculation.
Hmm. Yeah, so and let me just, could I just say, in regard to Rahm Emanuel, because he is from Chicago, and I remember his antics when I lived in Chicago and was on the air there. He is really a bad character. You have to know that. One of the famous stories about Rahm Emanuel is they were at some dinner party with white tablecloths and an elegant restaurant, an elegant setting, and he was disagreeing with someone, and he took a huge, thick steak knife and stood up and jammed it down into the table, trying to make his point. That's the kind of person that he is. He's actually pretty terrifying, and also he's noted for his horrible language. So not that that's I'm just trying to describe it without getting graphic.
Yeah.
He is a leftist of the left, and I actually think he's been kind of making noises in the last few days, not just this Atlantic article, but there was another, I don't know if he did an interview or another article. I you know what I think? Rahm Emanuel, of course, is no longer mayor. He was really disliked in the city of Chicago, especially by the police. And I think he's looking for his next thing. And I think maybe Rahm Emanuel, I'm just guessing, maybe thinking about running for president. And he's trying to strike a kind of coach his troops and kind of present himself as this moderate, wise voice and good advisor on what should happen. And who better to lead the charge on that than Rahm Emanuel?
Yeah. Sandy, one of the questions I wanted to ask you about, talking to Sandy Rios, Sandy's our guest here, this half hour for the next the last few minutes. This is regarding there's a story in the Washington Times today, and it's basically saying that ICE officers who endorsed President Trump in 2016, they are they're not happy with the president because they say he's not doing enough to stop catch and release. And so forth. The ICE agents and Border Patrol agents basically have been supporters of the president and backed him and his ideas and agenda about what to do about illegal immigration. But is there a division in the ranks here among the administration and ICE now because of this catch and release stuff?
Well, I think... I don't think there's a division between the administration, meaning Donald Trump, and the people closest to him. But there are, as we have said over and over again, there are people operating on the president's behalf who are not on the same page with him. I would say Kristen Nielsen is even one of those. She is not who she appears to be. She talks about strong border security, but when it actually comes to enforcing immigration policy, she's not very good at that. So what's happening is ICE and the Border Patrol are coming, you know, the pressure on them. Can you imagine the pressure on them right now to try to, who else is maintaining control at the border? The Congress has abdicated completely. The president can only do so much. And he just signed, of course, that horrendous spending bill, which provided for all these Democratic wish lists to do away with immigration enforcement, to hamstring, you know, all the things they're trying to do. So I think it's probably misguided to blame the president for this directly. Yeah, I think Congress, they're the ones that make these immigration laws. And they're the ones, and the courts, who are blocking him at every turn. If I faulted the president, it would be for appointing people like Kirstjen Nielsen and other people who have been not good on this issue, have stayed in control and managed these things, and it could have been much better. And we could have had some better enforcement. But really, it's Congress. It's Congress.
Mm-hmm. Well, this was I was just reading this. This was a letter, evidently, that the ICE union, that what they call them, the union that represents ICE officers had sent to the president, saying that such things as, quote, hundreds of man hours are wasted each day at a time of crisis on the border. They're talking about mundane, little small things that these ICE agents are required to do that they say are wasting their time. And this catch and release, though, that's been around a long time, and I don't think there's anything the president can do to stop that, Sandy.
No, not really. Of course, it doesn't help that he keeps being, he's not getting any help from the Republican leadership, so that he's being pressured to sign these horrendous bills. Well, and the Republican leadership is not fighting back. They're not holding their ground. They're just letting the Democrats have everything they want. So the Democrats, like in that last big spending bill, wrote in all their little wish lists for stopping enforcement. So
I'm not very optimistic on this issue. I do think the president has fought, and I do think many in the Republican Party have fought to do something about massive illegal immigration into this country. But when you have one of the major political parties and they're in control of the House of Representatives, they're for open borders. Yep. So that's a problem.
And voting for illegal immigrants. Nancy Pelosi came out in favor of that a few days ago. Yeah.
Yes, so that's a problem that I don't think I hate to be the bearer of bad news.
Well,
I don't think it's solvable.
I would, to Sandy's point, though, too, the Republicans did control the House for the first 2 years of the president's administration. All we kept hearing from Chuck Schumer is, we can't do it, we can't do it.
Mitch McConnell?
Mitch McConnell, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. We can't do it because we have Democrats. Mm-hmm. And I'm just saying that Mitch McConnell, they could have, if they really believe this issue was a crisis, they could have punted mm-hmm. on the filibuster and gotten this done. Mm-hmm. If they really wanted to, mm-hmm. they could have.
Yes.
And so I do fault Republican leaders. I don't think a lot of these Republican leaders want to have a wall or a secure border. They may very well be open border or a lesser form of it.
Yep. Yeah. Thanks, Sandy. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Take
Go
care.
Back to typing, Ray. Okay. It's okay now.
We'll do
it.
Ray.
We see you guys.
We're picking on Ray. Hey. Well, he's multitasking, Ed.
That's right.
That's right.
I didn't know it was him. I thought it might have been Sandy.
Yeah.
I don't know who's typing.
Ray, You think, what do you think? Do you think we're too pessimistic on this border crisis deal?
Oh, no, I think you're exactly right. Ed's already said it. The Republicans could have done something in the first 2 years, right? And so they didn't. And now, what a mess. It feels like we're stuck, doesn't it? What else is the president supposed to do? I don't know that I blame him for signing the bill. He wanted to get something more done on the wall. So
he tried shutting down the government, and I know you people are going to say, well, he didn't shut down the government. The Democrats shut down the government. But we can go back and forth on that one. He did.
Well, he said I'll own it.
Yeah, he did. Said, the president did agree to shut down the government in the name of border security for a wall. For wall funding, and he did, but that didn't work. And so what are you left with? But my point is, I think what's happening here, and this is the fault of our political leaders on both sides of the aisle over the years, we've led us to this point. Again, when you have nobody to specifically blame, it's frustrating because nobody can be held accountable, really. but what you have here at our border is you have our ICE and our Border Patrol agents and everybody they're just overwhelmed with all this. You're reading about this every day, and the people coming up from Central America and Mexico, they know this too. Right. They sort of smell blood in the water. In other words, they're not being able to handle all the people, the caravans and such. I mean, unless this is just being totally fabricated and made up, you're talking about thousands of people a week that are coming into our country. And our border patrol agents now can only, they can, especially, they know that they, if they come in with children, they get in.
Right.
And because, remember President Trump was...
Separating parents and children.
Children, right. Yeah. Ripping children out of the arms of parents.
Right.
That's what the left said, the media said. So, President got hit on that, and...
Even though President Obama did the same, instituted right. the policy.
Right. Right. And you can't, you know, it's an impossible situation that both these illegal immigrants know and the political left knows.
Right. And the media.
And the media is covering. Though, you can take advantage of this because if you bring in children and you plead asylum and they know you can't separate them from the kids, that's why you don't even know if these kids are the children of the people bringing them in.
Right.
And that's why Kirsten, the Secretary of Homeland Security, she was saying some of these children are being recycled. So they're being used to get in, and then they go. Anyway, I don't want to depress people. I just think that there's but I do think it is a depressing situation because there's seemingly nothing that can be done to stop people from pouring into our country. And, you know, there was a day and time when you would have said, well, let's fix this. We're all in this together, right? Democrats, Republicans, we all agree that we need a border, right? Now you look around and you say, we all agree we need a border, right? And then you see half the country going, no, we don't. And you're going, what do I do now?
And we are talking about as far back as President Bush's administration, Republicans doing nothing. And what's bizarre is that half a dozen or a dozen years ago, Democrats, we've played them on this show, Chuck Schumer and others, saying we cannot have illegal immigration, we've got to have a border, and yet it's been tossed around for political purposes for so long, nothing has gotten done.
Yeah, but the Democrats, I've mentioned this many times before, the Democrat Party, something could be done if the Democrat Party wanted to do something.
Right.
There are enough Republicans who want to do something, okay? Yeah. But the Democrats don't want to do anything about illegal immigration, because they see this as a way to take over the country. Mm-hmm. And they know the long game is you let them all in, you get as many illegal folks here as you can, tear down the borders best you can, and have open borders. Then
you amnesty.
Give amnesty to all these folks, millions and millions of people, give amnesty. And then these people, like African-Americans, 90% vote Democrat. They're counting on 80 to 90% of Hispanics who come here illegally getting amnesty, and then they get the right to vote.
Right.
And then the Republican Party is over is done as we know it, and basically the country. But the Democrats don't care because they want power, right?
Well, and they want socialism, and most of these right. people coming up from Central and South America come from
socialist
countries.
I think that could work.
They're going to vote socialist.
Yeah. That's what... The Democrats want to happen.
Right.
And the Republicans, some Republicans want to stop that. Well, I think all Republicans would want to stop
President
that.
President Obama said we want to fundamentally change the United States, and we are watching it happen.
Yeah. All right. Hey, as we said, folks, it's all sunshine here and happy time. It's all happy news. Fred, thank you.
Good to be here.
We shall return momentarily with more after the news. Steve Jordahl will be with us. We do need to pray for President Trump, and as he tries to do everything he possibly can about this situation with illegal immigration on the border. See you back here in a few minutes.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.